Beloved Bhagwan, successive patriarchs personally transmitted the Dharma from master to disciple. Without the personal transmission, not a single patriarch, master or disciple, could be a Buddha or a patriarch. It is just as if we were making innumerable small rivers join a great one, or keeping the light from going out, making countless lights one after another. Eventually, they become one. And there is no gap in the function of the transmission between master and disciple. So successive patriarchs spent their daily life face to face with Sakyamuni Buddha and watched by his face. How many days they had passed, I don't know. We should think calmly and be glad of this. Their eye and face are the Buddha's because they made bows to the Buddha's face and transferred his eye into their own, and vice versa. It is through the transmission that the eye and face have been incessantly transmitted till now. There is no gap in the transmission between master and disciple, just as one vine coils round another. That is to say, we open our eyes and present them with themselves. They receive themselves. The same can also be said of our face, mind, and body. Unless a disciple sees his master, he cannot be said to be a disciple. Unless a master sees his disciple, he cannot be a master. Both of them have got the transmission and succeeded to the Dharma by seeing each other. That is an appearance of the transmission of the patriarchs. Therefore, they could directly touch the Buddha's fine face. At the time of the transmission, our face will change completely. The skin itself will be a great mirror of the Buddha's, which has no flaw inside or out. The great mirror gives the transmission to the great mirror itself. Those who have been correctly given eyes true enough to see Sakyamuni Buddha personally are more intimate with him than he is with himself. Everyone, regardless of self and others, who sees the correct transmission or the real study of this new transmission of the Tathagata, should preserve it carefully.
Manisha, before I enter into the serious statements of scholarly dozen, I would like Avirbhava first. To inaugurate It was not the beer that I said yesterday. Knowingly, because I have so many cases around the world against me, that I have been hurting their religious feelings. Beer is worshipped by many. It is really the pig. But I had to put Ananda to research whether somebody's heart feelings will be hurt if we inaugurate the museum of the ancient dead gods. In other words, twice, Avirbhava is going to be the Director General. She is completely ready with the ears of a pig and the tail too. About pigs, in the ancient world, pigs were considered the embodiment of the Karn spirit, Osiris. He was the great Egyptian god of the underworld and judge of the dead. In Greece, pigs were sacred to Demeter, the goddess of the fruitful soil and agriculture, and today they are considered sacred in New Guinea. In China, the pig is considered a great delicacy, and as in many other countries in the past too, was traditionally served at banquets and feasts, notably marriage ceremonies. While people ate the roasted pork, they could view the stuffed pig in the center of the banquet table. Great care was always taken to choose a pig's head that had a pleasing face. Pigs were particularly popular at marriages because they represented virtue and fertility. Generally in China, pigs are venerated because they represent good fortune. So it is absolutely appropriate to inaugurate the museum with Avirbhava's own hands. Avirbhava, bring your pig and inaugurate Now we can turn to the serious matter. Even this inauguration will hurt many people's religious feelings. So few cases more. But this has been the right ancient God to inaugurate the coming up of the museum, where we are going to collect all the dead gods that have been worshipped by stupid humanity. Buddhas have been forced to worship pigs. And nobody has objected. Stones, monkeys, elephants, you name the name. They all have been worshipped somewhere else or other. But nowhere in the whole history of mankind, man has been given the dignity of a god. I am for the first time giving you the dignity of a god. And I want you to make a plaything of all the so-called gods worshipped by humanity. This is such a degradation, such a humiliation. But man has accepted slavery without revolting against it. If the crowd was worshipping the pig, they followed the crowd because the crowd gave them the security and coziness. And they had not the courage to revolt. Our museum will be specially devoted to all those idiots who have worshipped animals rather than searching their own superhuman consciousness, their own Buddha. Looking into mosques and synagogues and temples rather than looking into themselves. It will create legal problems, but that does not matter. I have faced legal problems my whole life. I tremendously enjoy the stupidity of judiciary around the world. They are is still protecting these people whose feelings are hurt if you say anything about the pigs. In the name of religion, all kind of nonsense has been forced on man's mind. My basic function is to take away all this nonsense from you so you can come out in your full glory, a full moon, a Buddha, sufficient unto yourself. I don't teach any prayer. I simply teach exploration of the inner world. There is the treasure, not in the scriptures as Dzogchen is saying. Dzogchen wrote successive patriarchs personally transmitted the dharma from master to disciple. It is a half-truth. And a half-truth is more dangerous than a lie. A lie is at least complete. Half-truths are very dangerous because they hide the lie behind them, and on the surface it looks that what is projected is true. What he is saying, that successive patriarchs personally transmitted the dharma from master to disciple, has a little truth in it. That has been so with most of the masters, that they have received the essence, the experience in the presence of a master. It has been a transmission between two energies. But this is not an absolute principle that he is making it. Without the personal transmission, not a single patriarch, master or disciple, could be a Buddha or a patriarch. It is so obviously stupid. Because who was the master of Gautam Buddha himself? From where he got the transmission? According to Dzogchen, he needs to have a master. He had none. It is only a half-truth. But the other half is more important. For the simple reason, you may not find a master, but the universal spirit is always available everywhere. The really courageous people simply take the jump in the universal being without being pushed by a master. It simply depends on your courage. To be a Buddha is your birthright. Just a little courage and you can declare yourself a Buddha. But the mind hesitates. The mind thinks thousand and one things. That what will happen to my smoking? And what about the girlfriend? And what about the bank balance? These small things I allow you to have. You can be a Buddha and smoke. Just that will be simply showing that you are a stupid Buddha. But stupid are not stupid. Nobody can take away your Buddhahood. You can have a girlfriend. Even Sardar Gurdayal Singh is having girlfriends and he is a well-known Buddha. Ancient. I don't think he himself knows how old he is. But there is no time for him to get old. Girlfriends continuously keep him so engaged. He has no time to grow old. One needs time to grow old. I allow you every concession that you want, except unawareness. That I cannot allow, because that is the fundamental of Buddhahood. If you are alert and aware and conscious, there is no need of any master. Universal energy itself transmits the light, the arrow that penetrates to your very center, and you become connected with the whole. A master is a small window from which you can see the starry sky. But that does not mean that first you need a window, then only you can see the starry night. Why don't you come out of the door? Mullah Nasruddin died. His grave still exists in Iran. I have told you he used to carry his door wherever he will go. And people will ask, what is the matter? Why are you carrying this bowl? Have you become a Christian? But even Christ was carrying only the cross, not the bowl. Is it some improvement on the cross? He said, no. It is just a security measure. Nobody can enter into my house without a door. So I have to carry the door. When he died, his disciples thought what to do about the door. He has left a written will in which he has mentioned about the door, that just put the door in front of my grave, lock it, and give the keys in my hands inside the grave. It still stands there, the door and the grave, and the skeleton must be having the keys. He is saying that if the door is closed and the keys are with me, nobody can disturb my sleep till the judgment day. Nobody can enter into the grave . He has taken security measures even after death. The door is locked. You may think it seems to be utter foolishness, but the man was laughing about you in all his acts, statements. This act is also simply laughing at the stupidity. What do you think about your security? Your bank balance? It can go bankrupt. What do you think of your security, your husband, your wife? If anybody between the both of you is intelligent enough, he will escape. There is no security. Even if you carry the door, there is no security. In fact, you are becoming more vulnerable. The thieves don't bother about entering from the door. In fact, they never enter from the door. They make a hole in the wall on their own accord. But the most hilarious part is that one day, a cold winter night, a thief entered into Mulla Nasruddin's house. Mulla Nasruddin opened one eye and looked at the thief. The thief started trembling. A man asleep with one eye open. Now he cannot even get out. Neither he can go in. He was so much afraid. Mullah said, "Don't be worried. I am coming with you." He said, "Where?" I said, "Inside the house where you are going." But the thief said, "The man seems to be mad. I am a thief." Mullah said, "I don't care who you are. For 30 years I have been looking into this house, I have not found anything. Now let us have a partnership. Whatever is found, 50-50. You came in right time because I was becoming discouraged." He said, "My God." But he had to go in and there was nothing. And Mullah followed him with his lamp to show him the way everywhere. And the thief wanted to escape somehow because in the lamp he will be also watching his face, and tomorrow the whole city will know that he is a thief. Mullah said, "Don't be worried. That's why I had opened only one eye. I am not looking at you. My concern is our partnership. He said, what partnership? There is nothing to be found. He said, that's what I was trying to tell you, but you won't listen. The thief said, I want to go. Nasruddin said, where? Then I am going to my house. Nasruddin said, I am also coming. Partners will live together. The thief said, my God, this is a difficulty. I have a wife. Nasruddin said, don't be worried about that. I will take care of her. You just do the job and I will take care of your wife. This man whose house was empty was carrying the door all around wherever he was going, making it a statement in his own way. The man was of immense intelligence. He is saying there is only door and nothing else. Just look through the door and the whole sky is open. By carrying the door, he was saying that I am a master, a door to the divinity. But he was a unique person. Dozen is still a scholar. I wonder that he could not see the simple point when he said, without the personal transmission, not a single patriarch, master or disciple could be a Buddha or a patriarch. What about the first Buddha? And if it can happen to Gautam Buddha without any master, why it cannot happen to anybody else? It is not a monopoly of Buddha. To become enlightened is everybody's birthright. These statements show that Dzogchen is still learning scriptures. He is not a Buddha yet. He became a Buddha finally, but went unnecessarily into astray lines, carrying the load of Buddha scriptures. And finally, when he got finished and fed up with the scriptures and dropped them, he was surprised that there was no need from the very beginning to search. You are it. The seeker is the goal. If you go on seeking other goals, you are going away from yourself. Seeking has to stop. It is just, says Dzogchen, as if we were making innumerable small rivers join a great one. Are keeping the light from going out, making countless lights one after another. Eventually they become one. Partly he is right, but only partly. And Buddhas don't make partial statements. Their statements are categorically absolute. And there is no gap in the function of the transmission between master and disciple. So successive patriarchs spent their daily life face to face with Sakyamuni Buddha and washed by his face. Now Sakyamuni Gautam Buddha has been dead at the time of Dzogchen for 1500 years. What do you mean by living face to face with Sakyamuni Buddha? You have only stone statues, utterly dead. In my village, there was very close to my house a temple of Shiva. And Shiva is represented with Shiva Linga. You must have seen Shiva temples. Just any beautiful round stone is placed, and Shivalinga means the prick of the Lord Shiva. Now, the devotees of Shiva are going to be freaked. But what can I do? I am simply translating the word Shivalinga. One of my friend's father lived just in front of that temple, and he was a great devotee of Shiva. I told him, "You are wasting time. That Shiva is absolutely worthless." He said, "What do you mean? You are hurting my religious feeling." I said, "That is going to be my profession in my whole life. It is just the beginning. Because I have seen rats urinating on your Shiva. He cannot do anything to the rats. What he is going to do to you?" He was so angry that he told me, "You get out from the house." I said, "I will get out, whether you say it or not. But whenever you will go in the temple, I will be standing there by your side, seeing your stupidity. I will not say a single word. But you will understand why I am standing." He said, "You are a strange boy." And since that day, almost for 6 months, I followed regularly. Whenever he will enter in the temple, he will look all around. But I was able from my house to see. So So immediately I will enter and stand there without saying a word. And he will say, my God, have you come? I said, it is better to stop this stupidity. Don't you see so many rats in this temple? He said, it is true. And it is also true that I have seen those rats urinating over the Shiva. But this is just a statue, a representative, a symbol of the real Shiva. I have said, have you seen the real Shiva? Is he just a prick? He said, listen. You are not allowed to come into my house anymore. I said, I have no intention. If you stop coming to this temple, I will stop coming to your house. It is an agreement. But if you come to this temple, nobody can prevent me coming to your house and provoking you. I will do everything to make you alert that you are being very idiotic. He said to his son that you drop friendship with this boy because this boy is going to spoil you. He is spoiling me. Because sometimes I started thinking that perhaps I am being stupid. On all rational grounds, the boy is right. I have not seen Shiva, and I have never bothered about the meaning of Shiva Linga. In my dreams, he said, you have started coming. I said, if you prevent me coming to your house, then that is the only way to wake you up. The old man finally decided not to go to this temple. He will go to another temple, but that was a temple of an elephant god. What difference does it mean? Dogen is talking about Sakyamuni Buddha as if the Buddha is alive and you are watching at him. There are certainly more statues of Gautam Buddha in the world than of anybody else. And it was his last statement before he died that don't make my statues. Because I will not be in my stone statues. But just as nobody listens to the master, they resisted for 300 years, but then finally they gave up. First, they started worshipping the grave of Gautam Buddha. But it is not much joy to worship a grave Then somebody suggested to worship the tree under which Gautama Buddha became enlightened. That was a better idea. A tree is at least a living phenomenon. A beautiful tree with great foliage. But after all, a tree is a tree. It cannot be a substitute for Gautama Buddha. Nothing can be a substitute except your own consciousness. All these statements made by Dzogchen simply show that he does not know. How many days they have passed, I don't know. We should think calmly and be glad of this. Their eye and face are the Buddha's, because they made vows to the Buddha's face and transferred his eye into their own, and vice versa. It is through the transmission that the eye and the face had been incidentally transmitted till now. There is no gap in the transmission between master and disciple. Just as one vine coils round another, that is to say, we open our eyes and present them with themselves, they receive themselves. The same can also be said of our face, mind and body. I said to you that it is a half-truth. It is true that if you are living with a living master, not with a statue, then gazing into his eyes are just watching his presence, his gestures, and you will see how awareness functions. And as you become more and more aware of your master, simultaneously you will be becoming aware of yourself. The master finally proves to be a mirror. In the mirror you can see your face, your original face, not the painted one which the society has given to you. Your original heart, not the lungs which are used for pumping the blood in the body. The original heart is hiding behind it. But watching your master in his day-to-day life, something is transmitted, some energy, some light, some fragrance reaches to you, but it can happen not with a statue. And Buddhists have done almost impossible thing. There is a temple in China which is called a temple of 10,000 Buddhas. The whole mountain has been carved into 10,000 Buddhas. And there are many temples in China, in Japan, in India, although Buddhists disappear from India, but all the beautiful places like Ajanta, are nothing but Gautam Buddha's statues in different postures, sitting, lying, standing, sleeping, waking. And the whole mountainside has been carved first into big graves and then the statue has to be carved into the shaded cave. It must have taken thousands of years for thousands of sculptures and of very fine potentialities, because the statues are so beautiful. But it is a futile effort. In the time you carve a Buddha in a marble, in that very time you can become 1,000 times a Buddha. I consider it an absolute wastage of time. Unless a disciple sees his master, he cannot be said to be a disciple, obviously. Scholars are so foolish. If a disciple has not seen the master, it is obvious that he is not a disciple. A disciple is only in reference to a master. A master can be alone. He is not dependent on disciples. His mastery is dependent on his own awakening. But a disciple cannot be a disciple on his own accord. He has to be in deep trust, in love with someone who has arrived home. He's saying it right, but he does not seem to know that Buddha has been dead for 15 centuries in his time, and now it is 25 centuries. You cannot be a disciple of Buddha. And all the Buddhists are living in the fallacy that they are disciples of Buddha. You need a living master to transmit the radiation that creates your sleeping Buddhahood and wakes it up. No statue can do that. Therefore, they could directly touch the Buddha's fine face. He is still talking about statues. No disciple will dare to touch the Buddha's face when he is living. The East knows that the disciple's reach is up to the feet of the Master. And there is a certain science in it. As the disciple touches the Master's feet, the Master touches the disciple's head. It becomes a circle. And from the feet, the energy moves into the disciple, and from the hand, the energy moves into the disciple, and somewhere at the center of the disciple's heart, the Master's energy creates enough fire to wake up the sleeping potentiality of the disciple. It is not just a gesture of gratitude to touch the feet of the Master. It has a subtle science about it. But you can touch the Buddha's fine face only if your Buddha is a stone statue. And by the way, I have to remind you that the face of the Buddha in the statue is not his. Because Buddha was born on the boundaries of Nepal and India. Most probably he was Nepalese. It was just on the boundary where two countries meet. He cannot have this face that appears in the statues. By a strange coincidence, when his statues were being made, Alexander the Great was visiting India. It was Alexander the Great's face that inspired the sculptors and certainly the Greek face has a beauty of its own, and Alexander was one of the most beautiful men the earth has seen. So the face you see on Buddha is not even his. In those days there were no photographs, so it was very easy to put anybody's head on anybody else's body. Even the body does not seem to be Buddha's. It seems to be almost 7 feet. Nepalese are not that height. Even in India, 7 feet is a very rare case. Nor Buddha was so athletic as the body seems to be. And he has been for 6 years in continuous self-torture. The body would have become just bones. The statue is absolutely false. And by touching this statue's face, you cannot get any transmission. If you get, it is imagination. It is hallucination. You are deluding yourself. At the time of the transmission, our face will change completely. The skin itself will be a great mirror of the Buddha's, which has no flaw inside or out. The great mirror gives the transmission to the great mirror itself. Once in a while he says something beautiful. He is a great scholar. At the time he is making these statements, it is true that between a master and a disciple, when the transmission happens, the face of the disciple starts changing to a new grace, a new beauty, a new compassion, a new love, a new joy, a new dance. He starts reflecting his master's being on a smaller scale. But it is possible only if the master is alive. I am against all statues because they are deceptive. They are deluding millions of people who may have been seeking and searching the truth. But every milestone shows them the way towards a temple or a synagogue or a mosque. And the way is inwards, not outside. A great Sufi master is known to have gone through a great transmission. His name was Junaid. He was the master of Al-Hillaz Mansur. Al-Hillaz Mansur is more known to the world because he was crucified just like Jesus, in a more cruel way. Part by part he was cut, American way, installments. But Junaid was a very poor man. And it is said that unless in your life at least one time you go to the pilgrimage of Mecca, where the stone Kaaba is representing Muhammad's place, it is from that stone that sitting on his horse, he simply went upwards to paradise and took his horse too. If you are an authentic Mohammedan, at least to visit that place once in a lifetime. So even the poorest Mohammedans collect money, sell their houses, their farms, because it is absolute necessity before they die, they must go to Kaaba. Junaid was getting old and he was too poor, so he collected money from his neighbors. Nobody refused because the money was for the journey to Kaaba. And everybody is told that if you support a Mohammedan for his pilgrimage, you also partake some virtue of the great pilgrimage. So people gave money to him, gave him some food, clothes, so that he can go. He has to travel, but people were surprised. The next day he was back. It was expected that he will come in about 6 months, 3 months going and 3 months coming. Too quick, people could not believe. And another point, he looked absolutely transformed. So radiant, so blissful. They said, what happened? Junaid said, Kaaba itself came to meet me outside the village. They said, this is sheer nonsense. That big stone, it is a steroid fallen from the sky. Huge. They asked him, tell us in detail at least what really has happened. A Sufi master, Bayezid, was sitting outside the village under a tree. On the crossroads, Junaid asked him which way I should go because I am going for the pilgrim. Time to reach at Kaaba. At a certain time every year is the time when Mohammedans from all over the world try to reach Kaaba. Bayezid said, nonsense. Bring out all the money. And he said with such authority that poor Junaid brought all his money that he has gathered, and Bajit said, there is no need to go anywhere. Just take 7 rounds around me. I am the Kaaba. Junaid could not believe it for the first. But what to do? The man was so his eyes were so penetrating, his presence was so fragrant, that he went 7 times as Mohammedans are supposed to go round the Kaaba stone 7 times. And he said, now give all other provisions you have for the journey and go home. Your pilgrimage is complete. And he could feel also that something has changed. I am no more the old person who has come just few minutes before. So he told to the villagers that I met a man who said that I am the Kaaba. And he has taken all provisions and all money and told me to take 7 rounds. Few people laughed. Those who were stupid laughed, but those who were wise understood. Because they could see the transformation that has happened. It does not matter who was the man, but certainly the man was a man of realization. Just being around him for 7 times, Junaid himself became a master. But it cannot happen by going around a stone 7 or 700 or 7,000 times. Those who have been correctly given eyes true enough to see Sakyamuni Buddha personally, now what nonsense he is talking. Buddha is dead for 1500 years. There is no way now to personally connect with him. Yes, you can connect somebody else who is still alive and has the same taste of Buddhahood. But he is not talking about that. He is talking about stone Buddhas. Everyone, regardless of self and others, who sees the correct transmission or the real study of this new transmission of the Tathagata, should preserve it carefully. The word steady gives the loophole. Dozen is still a student, a scholar. He is talking about as if he knows, and you will come across the world people who are talking about God as if they know. And millions of people, believe in it, it seems our minds have lived so long in its slavery that we have forgotten even to question. Now, Dogen is not us, that what you are talking about is sheer nonsense. 1500 years gap cannot be fulfilled. You have to find a living Buddha. Of course, the living Buddha will have the same taste and the same blissfulness and the same aura and the same energy as the original Gautam Buddha had. But this is possible only with a living master. The search for truth is basically search for a living master. It is very rare that you can find the way without a master. But I allow the exception. I allow the exception because I myself had never any master. I have met with many masters, but they all wanted to get rid of me because my presence was such a danger to their respectability. I raised questions that they could not answer, and other disciples started disappearing, and they will say, "Please, you go on and find somebody else. Don't disturb our disciples." They had never been asking such questions since you came. They have started strange questions of which we know nothing. There are around the world many who pretend that they know, but you can see in their eyes, in their gestures, in their silences, in their words, whether they know or just tape recorders quoting scripture. It is not very difficult. Just scratch a little bit and you will find the scholar and the scripture. They cannot transmit truth. They cannot help you to open the door to existence. They can only create faith in you, in some dead god, in some dead prophet. They are a great consolation, but consolation is not a revolution. Consolation is very dangerous. It prevents you from searching more. It prevents you from searching deeper. A Zen poet wrote, "I intend to transmit it to you, but you cannot take it. You may yearn to imitate me, neither can this succeed. If you purposely turn back, you are the one who is meddling. If I part with you, you would think me destitute of sentiments." These are words of a master. He is saying, if you turn away on your own, you are missing an opportunity. If I turn you away, I am not compassionate, and it is intrinsic in being a Buddha to be compassionate. But you cannot imitate me, and you cannot intend to transmit it to you, neither you can take it. It is not something which can be given. It is not something which has to be found somewhere. It is just a sleeping Buddha waking up. Just as every morning you wake up, superficially, a day comes when you wake up in the very innermost core of your being. And once that waking has happened, you never lose it. Jacquan wrote, "Perfect melody, like wind, among the pines of far-off slopes, mind is vast, sky clean. Hear it beyond itself." These are people of meditation, the people of the path, who are not quoting scriptures, but their words will become scriptures. Another Zen poet, "You must see for yourself the reed flowers drenched in moonlight. You cannot believe in somebody else's eyes. You must see for yourself the reed flowers drenched in moonlight. The beauty is such that no description can be justification, no explanation is possible. The same is true on a far greater and far wider scale about your own being. You should see its beauty with your own eyes. Never have faith in anyone except in yourself. Have trust in yourself, and if that trust finds a way and you fall in love with a certain energy, with a certain master, don't make any effort. Just let it happen silently, without making any noise of footsteps. If you are fortunate, you may find someone. But don't feel destitute. If you cannot find a master, the universal spirit is available to you directly. Just a little more courage. Either a little more courage or a master. Both are possible at any time, in any age. Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, are you not the exception to what Dzogchen says, in that you did not have a personal transmission from a master?" I have a transmission from the universe itself. The moon has come to my window on its own. As you did not have a master, how were you tickled? I am being tickled by my disciples. Do you want a little tickling session? Wedding anniversary, mean old Hemis McTavis decides to treat his wife Maggie by taking her out to lunch at the Bawling Bagpipe restaurant. They order their food And when it arrives, Hemis starts eating, but Maggie just sits there watching. The waiter becomes anxious and goes over to the old couple. "Is there something wrong with your food, Mrs. McTavish?" he asks. "No, no, young man," replies Maggie. "I am just waiting for my husband to finish. He is using the teeth first." Paddy gets sentenced to 30 days in jail for being drunk and disorderly. When Judge Rumcake has finished pronouncing the sentence, Paddy asks if he can say something. "Why, of course," says the judge. "If I called you a son of a bitch," suggests Paddy, "what would you do?" "What?" says Rumcake. "I would hold you in contempt of court and give you an extra week in jail." "I see," says Paddy. "And if I thought you were a son of a bitch, what would you do?" "In that case," replies Judge Rumcake, "I would do nothing because there is no law against thinking." "Ah, well, in that case," concludes Paddy, "I think you are a son of a bitch." Milarepa, Devagi, and Sarjano find themselves sitting outside Pythagoras' clinic, waiting to see Dr. Azima. "What are you guys here for?" asks Devagi. "It is a my prick," admits Sarjano. Nervously, "It has turned bright orange." "What?" exclaims Milarepa and Devagi together. "That is what I am here for," says Milarepa. "And me too," exclaims Devagi. So the three Swamis enter the clinic together, undressing Milarepa and Devagi, expose their bright orange machinery, and Sarjano unrolls his sausage. "My God," says Azima, "that is amazing." And he starts to make his examinations. "How is your sex life?" asks Azima. "Do you make a love once a night?" The three Swamis look at each other and shake their heads in silence. "Well, how about twice a week?" continues Azima. "There was a time," replies Milarepa, and Devagi and Sarjano nod quietly. "Well, how about twice a month?" asks Azima. "I wish," says Devagi, genially. "Once a month?" suggests Azima. There is another silence. "Well, that is okay then," says Azima. "Don't be worried. It is just a rust. Ronald and Nancy Reagan are invited to dinner by Admise and his wife, Pope the Pollock and his bishop, and Rajiv and Mrs. Gandhi. They go to a nice restaurant downtown and are seated immediately at the celebrities' table. With full pomp and circumstance, head waiter Reginald the homosexual serves them cocktails and takes their orders. He returns to the kitchen and hands the order slip to Jabulansky the cook. "Hey, wait a minute," says Jabulansky. "This order give Nancy Reagan her favorite chicken parts." "Yes, that is correct," agrees Reginald gaily. "What about it?" "Well," says Jabulansky, "what the hell are Nancy Reagan's favorite chicken parts?" "I don't know," says the better. "Waiter, but as far as I can tell, they must be right wings and assholes." Nibedano. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Use this moment of silence to go in without any fear. this is your temple. This is where every Buddha has found himself. In this silence, you are no more yourself. You have become part of an oceanic consciousness. This is what being a Buddha means. Deeper and deeper, Nibbana, let go. Leave the body and the mind aside. Just keep yourself as a watcher, a witness, and suddenly lights, flames, blessings, and flowers of the unknown start showering on you. This is your sky. You can go as deep, as far, as you want. You will not meet anyone on the way. There is no need to be afraid. You can only be encountered by yourself. Your authentic and original being. What a blessed evening. 10,000 Buddhas together. Rejoicing in silence. Tasting immortality. In a single moment, the whole eternity is condensed. Nivedana. Come back. Slowly and gracefully remember you have been into the land of the Buddhas. Sit down for a few moments, collecting your memory so that it can become an undercurrent 24 hours in your life of joy and bliss and ecstasy. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Bhagwan.
Can we celebrate 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes, Bhagwan.